things that are very big in my memory. As soon as I get through testing, well, I'm going to start. I have 45 minutes on each side. That means there's an hour and a half on each one of these tapes for me to put things down, which I don't seem to be able to. Well, there's no reason why anyone should lose the experience. When I was in Italy in October, I became keenly aware of the profound importance of my experience in the Army and in my war to me. And since reflecting on it on return, I realized that whatever my thoughts are, whatever my feelings are, whatever the depth of my despondency might be when I reflect on those years, nonetheless, they are disparate to other influences in my life, understandably so, because war is a time of tremendous emotion. So I'll start off by saying, as best I can, why I think that I went into the Army to begin with. I went into the Army to begin with because my country was at war, and because I felt that it was my war as much as anyone else's, and because I thought it was for right and proper causes. I went in also because all my life I had looked upon war as a terrible challenge, a challenge of manhood, of virility, of courage. A recurrent dream until the time I was in the war was that I would be in battle and that I would be found wanting. I don't know if other young men have that dream or that fear as I did, or if they did and do, if it was important enough for them to have a nightmare about it. This may have had something to do with, or this, I should say, this may have grown out of my childhood, which was disturbed. And perhaps I felt that there was some emotional lack in me that would disqualify me, or perhaps that has nothing to do with it. In any event, I engaged in every sport when I was growing up. As a matter of fact, I came out for everything. I was gangly. I was always one of the younger people in the class. I was always in the young half of each class I was in. But I came out for football, baseball, track, basketball. I may not have come out for swimming because I was not as well trained as obviously as other boys. I made house teams, but the only school team that I made was football. And that was because I could make up with determination, I guess, what I lacked in coordination. And I played football in junior college. Another reason that I signed up, I think, was because I had a latent dissatisfaction with my life, with what I was into, and perhaps with my personal relationships, my most personal relationships. I remember seeing others in uniform and being impatient. I volunteered, but I volunteered under something that was called the VOCO. I'm not sure what those initials stand for. The first two are volunteer officer, maybe volunteer officer corps or something. But in a word, it was that if you had a draft deferment of any kind, you could present yourself at once, go into basic training, and apply for officer candidate school. And only if you failed to get into officer candidate school would you be free to return and resume your place in the draft. Well, I did sign up for that. I was taken into the Army in May of 1942, Texarkana, Texas. And from there I was shipped by bus along with the other recruits to Camp Robinson in North Little Rock for induction. Joe, my wife, returned to Little Rock, I believe, at that time, and I was able to see her there at camp for the week or so while I was there before being shipped to a basic training camp. While I was there, I got my first indoctrination into serving in the Army. From daylight until dark, it was a long, hard day. I particularly remember KP, where from early morning until after supper had been cleaned up, I, along with the others chosen for that day, did our work. I was so tired after lunch that I lay on a concrete floor, I guess in the storeroom adjacent to the kitchen, and went to sleep. The cook stirred me up and advised me that I was sucking for trouble if I repeated that. However, it was all very stimulating and very interesting. I'd never had any training except for a while before volunteering. I'd served in something called the Texas National Guard, which some eager beavers organized in Texarkana, Texas. They didn't organize the Texas Home Guard, but they organized a company, and I got a little bit of close order drill and then a khaki uniform, which we bought for ourselves, and some insignia. We had gotten our first indoctrination. While at Camp Robinson, one of the events that I recall was taking an IQ test. I was very uptight about it because I wanted to do well, and this is one of the things that you must not do. I scored 128, I learned later on that test, checking each problem as I went through rather than just answering and getting as many done as possible. We were shipped from Camp Robinson by rail to Camp Walters near Mineral Wells, Texas. That was the beginning of an association with some men that continues thanks to the enthusiasm of one member of the group, continues to this day. It seems to me we unloaded at night at Camp Walters, at Mineral Wells, and were trucked out to Camp Walters and assigned our barracks. It was important to me to be a squad leader, be chosen by the officers as a squad leader, but when squad leaders were chosen, I was not among them. I don't know the reason. It may be that they found some IQs higher than 128, or perhaps there was some other reason. Except for the VOCOs, who were mostly from Camp Robinson, this training company was made up of people from Minnesota, primarily, and I think the Dakotas. in general, they spoke with a different accent, of course, but their manners were different. Their appearance was different from Southerners. Even as recently as 1942, sectionalism was very distinguishable among people. My squad leader was an excellent man from Blue Earth, Minnesota. His name was Spencer. I wish I could remember his first names. Perhaps it will come to me. He was a scholarly type, and I believe had been to law school, or perhaps was in pre-law when he came into the Army. He was intelligent and kind and understanding, but somewhat introverted and perhaps less a leader type for this kind of command than some others may have been. Somewhere during the course of basic training early, I was chosen to replace him as squad leader. There was never any rancor on his part. Our friendship grew from that point rather than diminished. The work of basic training was harder than anything that I'd ever known, and I seem to recall of all the disciplines, cleaning the latrine, and on Saturdays, I believe, cleaning the windows in the exterior of the barracks was the hardest work I'd ever known. It never occurred to me that you could get a window absolutely clean and had to before you could go to town, or that if you looked into the where the light doesn't fall as strongly in a basin or a urinal, that you'll find that there is a buildup of dirt there, grease and dirt, which has to be expunged. After I'd worked very hard and had a perfectly clean latrine one time, the corporal came in and made me, or perhaps the others that I was working with, do it all over again. We had to polish the brass that the water dripped from or ran from in the urinal as well. This was a properly humbling experience. Of course, we kept our barracks clean, and which included scrubbing down the floor, I guess, once a week as well. These housekeeping chores seem to be harder than anything, making a perfectly smooth bed every morning, having it for a while, having a corporal, or perhaps even a PFC. I can remember how important I thought a PFC was at that time, that one little stripe, because he carried the authority of a corporal, I guess, in commanding us. In general, the calisthenics were very easy for me. The classes were easy, but I never did become much of a marksman. It was only when I had to teach rifle target practice that I got fairly good. And of course, that was after I became an officer several months later. The long dreaded hike was very easy. Of course, this was by now summer, and it was hot in Mineral Wells, although always cool if you got in the shade. And our dreaded hike, which was built up, there was a certain amount of psychological burden to it, because it was built up as being so difficult. It was a 20-mile hike with a 40-mile pack. They did spare us by having that at night. It was not something I would have chosen to do for fun, but it was not hard for me, as it was for people who already, I like to say, carrying 40 pounds before they put that 40 pounds on, 40 excess pounds, being slim and down to about 160 pounds by the time I'd sweated it out there, down from about 175. Well, it was easy for me, as were the daytime hikes in the hot sun, because I observed my salt discipline and, again, was not as heavy as other people, knew hot weather perhaps better than these Northerners. I can remember how they would fall out on these hikes, and it always seemed a little strange to me, because it wasn't happening to me. On one night march, single file, simulating approach march in combat, I can remember one of the really tense incidents in my whole career, oddly, and whose resolution I attribute to God and to Christian Science. I, by that time, was squad leader and bucking for all the recommendations that I could get. We were allowed at the end of every 50 minutes to take a 10-minute break, as is the Army custom. And when we did so, we were to pull off the road and into the brush on the low mesquite trees and so forth on the side of the road. We'd been taught that our rifle was like being trusted with the Holy Grail, that we kept our rifle with us at all times. We kept it perfectly clean. We protected it in all ways. I drowsed off on one of those 10-minute breaks, and when the whistle blew or the call came for us to get back in line, well, I was quickly at the head of my squad, but on account of, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 paces, I realized I didn't have my rifle. Pitch black dark, and with light discipline, we couldn't have show any light at all, even if we had such. But I rushed back as well as I could, praying, went into the brush in pitch black dark, reached down and touched my rifle, picked it up, and ran and got back at the head of my squad. Among the other rookies, two besides Spencer come to my mind as my special friends. One was named Tom Tipton and the other one was named Morrison. When we got through the period of time when we were not allowed off the base, it seemed to me that Morrison and I most frequently went into town together and drank beer. In the hot summertime, as physical as we were, and with all the other good reasons, beer was nectar to us. It was ambrosia. And we would stay in mineral wells where opportunities for any kind of diversion were minimal until time for us to check back in. I can remember, however, one evening when Morrison and I went to a USO dance. And I can remember a very attractive girl that I danced with, a girl from Fort Worth. And I remember her simply because she was attractive. I think I made some kind of a future engagement with her, which I later canceled by letter. But she was an attractive diversion. By that time, though, Joe was allowed to come to Mineral Wells, and I could see her and maybe spend the night with her at the hotel in Mineral Wells, and before the basic training period of 13 weeks was over, well, she could pick me up in our little red Ford coupe and take me to Fort Worth, where we had pleasant, idyllic, rushed weekends together, driving back pre-dawn in time to get me back for Reveille on Monday morning. At that time, Edmund Van Zandt, who incidentally was another reason that I signed up, had not yet been inducted. He had written me that he had volunteered for the Marines under a special program of theirs, under which he would become an officer on the day he was inducted. Incidentally, before I was inducted, I had an opportunity to come in as a as an officer into the Transportation Corps under a special plan that a friend of mine named Dorsey, what was his first name, who was the executive secretary of the Junior Chamber of Commerce, in which I was very active at that time. He was going to command the company, and he offered me the job of executive officer in the company that he was organizing. I refused it because, in the first place, that didn't fit my idea of what the Army was about, and secondly, I didn't feel that I deserved to go in as an officer without without having qualified myself for it. But when Joe and I would go back to Fort Worth on those several weekends, we'd get to see the Van Zandts, as I recall it. It was only later that he was inducted into the Marines. I suppose there are a lot of things that I can recall of basic training. One of them was a man named Reuter, who was a huge, awkward man that we all loved, but we all made fun of also. He loved nothing better than the hard routine jobs like KP and like having to scrub up the barracks or the mess hall. There's a story I like to tell about him. We were all constantly reminded as part of our test that we had to know who each of our commanders up the line was, who our squad leader, platoon leader, company commander, battalion commander, on up to base commander. And we had a little base newspaper that we read. One week it came out that the commanding officer had commanding general, I guess, had shaved off his mustache. Well, one time we were out on the firing range, and the battalion commander, who was a lieutenant colonel, which even though I'd come from fairly sophisticated circumstances, to me and to the rest of us, he was somewhere way up in the pantheon of the gods, and we were scared of him, and very careful when he addressed us to say the right thing. But by the time he came upon Reuter on the firing range one time waiting for his turn, I've lost my sentence there, but he came upon Reuter waiting for his turn, this lieutenant colonel, and he thought to quiz Reuter, and he said, "Reuter, how is it going?" He said, "Well, all right, I guess." He said, "Well, is there anything you don't like?" "Oh, everything is all right, I guess." "Are you sure?" He said, "Well, there is one thing I hate." "And what is that, Reuter?" "I hate them damned exercises." He was speaking of calisthenics. He could not coordinate in any of the exercises there, and it embarrassed him and angered him. He's a big, heavy-handed man. But then the man started asking who different people were, and finally he said, "Well, who is your battalion commander?" And Reuter was just like a small child. He didn't say, "You are, sir, Colonel," whatever his name was. He just sort of ducked his head and a little sneaky smile and looked at the colonel as if to say, "You know who it is." But then he came at last to who the base commander was, and he said, "You mean the feller that just shaved his whiskers off?" That was all he could remember. And the other thing I remember about is every time the colonel would ask him a question, he'd answer with a simple reply, and the colonel would keep saying, "When you address an officer, you're supposed to address him as sir. Do you know that, Reuter? And Reuter said, yeah, I know that. That was as much as he would say to it, and he continued to overlook adding that sir. But anyway, Reuter was quite a character that I remember. He was a great beer drinker, and we had near beer. We had 3.2. Yeah, but I'm not sure. We had 3.2 on the base. We had regular beer in town. And that was over adjoining the main barracks area, but a little distance. And there was a dry ditch that ran between that and the rest of the area. And there was a footbridge across it. And each evening, well, Reuter would say, well, I'm going to go over across the little bridge. And that was as much as he needed to say, because that was where he spent his evenings drinking the 3.2 beer. Well, that was a great summer there. Oh, it was interesting also that Orville Faubus, who was one of the VOCOs with us, Orville Faubus of late infamy, or later infamy, but he was a little older than the rest of us. I guess I was in 1942, I must have been 28. That sounds pretty old, older than I think, but it seems to me it's more like 26 that I was. But anyway, Faubus was in his 30s, and he seemed very old to us, and he was very cordial and cooperative. He was not the outstanding member of the company, but he was agreeable and quiet and a little older, and we liked him. He spent a great deal of time writing back to his hometown newspaper, because he was from Madison County and had been county judge, so we called him Judge, and he'd also owned and published this newspaper, which his wife was publishing in his absence. And of course, he was writing back to the paper and writing back to friends to keep them informed about him because of his future political ambitions. I remember one thing, well, of course, my purpose was to get into officer candidate school, so when the time came to apply, well, I was all spiffed up and shined up as well as I could to go over before the reviewing board. And I think I did very well, except when I was dismissed and it was time for me to, and of course, I'd been standing at attention answering their questions. When I turned to leave, well, somehow or another, I got my feet tangled up. I was a little afraid that that might disqualify me, but it turned out that it didn't. So I was one of the ones held over after the rest of the company was shipped out to whatever unit they were going to be assigned to, until the officer candidate class to which I was assigned, which I believe was, well, it had to be in September 26th, I believe, was the actual date. It's a 3-month course, and I know that I graduated on December 26th. So this was the end of August, I guess, May, June, July, August. Yes, it must have been the middle of August, so I had to, anyway, I had a couple of weeks or more of waiting. So I was assigned along with one other VOCO. Remember his name in a minute. But anyway, we were assigned to do general housekeeping chores, and one chore was to clean up and maintain the little storeroom where mattresses and brooms and I suppose some furniture and what all were kept. Well, we were spending our evenings in town, out all night, since we were pretty well privileged. So what we would do in the morning when we'd go to our job was to lock the inside of the door in that storeroom, and it was cool enough in there in the shade. And we would sleep on those mattresses, but the first day we took the push broom and swept, half swept the floor, and we took a saw and sawed it halfway through a board, and we left the broom where the sweepings were and the saw in the board, and we slept most of the day, always prepared to be inspected by one of the sergeants. But of course, by that time we could scramble onto our feet, and one of us grabbed the saw and the other grabbed the broom and unlocked the door. So we were beyond surprise. However, we also learned something about the Army at that time, that the main thing was for us to stay out of sight, have people know where we were, but not to embarrass the officers by being visibly idle. We spent basic training doing everything except drilling, as I recall it, and we were issued O3s, that is the bolt action Springfield rifle that made the American rifleman famous in World War I. We were issued O3s very late in our basic training period. They came in carbolene, which is the worst of greases to remove, and this was a long, difficult process with our rifles. My incident with the rifle in the woods must have come late because we got those rifles late. I mention that because we had very little close order drill with rifles, as I recall it, and never was I in the position to command as much as a platoon. So when I went to basic training in September, I'd had close order drill, but no rifle drill, close order drill to speak of, very little. Another circumstance which I believe, one circumstance which I've failed to mention, which I believe is pertinent, is that my company was a heavy weapons company. That is to say that we had the heavy machine gun and the 81 millimeter mortar. So again, our training was in heavy weapons rather than in rifle techniques and rifle tactics. This was a matter of some irony later on in my experience. I do remember that I was chosen to be the gunner, I believe. Yes, the gunner in a heavy weapons competition on a field range one time. As I recall, I failed to distinguish myself there because I put a left, what do you call it, deflection, rather than a right deflection at the critical moment, and failed by that greater distance to hit the target. Of course, we weren't given a great deal of ammunition because it was not considered so expendable at that time during the war. I fancy I did all right with the machine gun. I had done well in studying with the mortar. Otherwise, I would not have been chosen as a gunner. The one weapon which I had no mastery over was the 45 automatic pistol. I got through basic training yesterday pretty well. I remember during the night the first name of my Spencer friend. It was Eldon Spencer. I also remember the first name of Henry Dorsey. One of the things at basic training that was sort of a high point was an entertainment that we put on in the some kind of an auditorium or hall there on the base. I was devilishly clever, pretending that we elected officers rather than had officers appointed. So I made a campaign speech to be elected an officer, told all the things that I would do to make life easier. We also had a minstrel, as I recall it. Perhaps there were two shows, must have been. The minstrel was had, among other things in it, singing of Camp Town races, and each one of us in the minstrel line would stand up and sing a verse. I could never really learn that verse. I was too embarrassed and afraid I was going to be off key, I guess, but I remember that as being a footnote there. For the life of me, I can't remember how I got to Fort Benning. Oh, another thing I neglected to mention ever, that when I volunteered for the infantry. I guess this was part of this thing of mine to be to go in and prove something to myself. If I was going to go in the Army, I was going to go in the real fighting part of it. None of the other arms or branches were going to suit me. I must confess that I would in any event have chosen the infantry over the Air Force, because I didn't want to die up in the air crashing, and I didn't want to be in a submarine or on the water. I wanted if I was going to die, and I didn't particularly think I was going to, but the chances were there. Well, I wanted to die on the ground. I'm going to try to learn to do this without saying quite so much. For the life of me, I cannot remember how I got to Fort Benning, Georgia, the infantry school, from Camp Walters. I guess I was part of a contingent, a detachment that was sent on special orders on some special train. All I remember at first was being there. And I was assigned to the 30th Company of the 3rd Student Training Regiment. In other words, that was the 90th Company. Those who graduated from Officer Candidate School were called 90-day wonders, because that was the length of time we stayed. This meant that one company of 200 men were being made officers each day at Fort Benning at the height of the training, preparing for the large army which we were building. The 30th Company of the 3rd Student Training Regiment had not been completed when I got there. We bathed under a typical yard hydrants out in the open. Our billet was in hutments with one squad each, I believe. About 20 hutments with 10 in each hutment. There was segregation yet in the Army at that time, and the last two were black squads. They were dealt with as squads. We were dealt with as squads, I guess, but there were probably 10 of us in each one of those hutments. The one I was in was next to the two black Putman's because my name was Temple and we were arranged alphabetically. I can remember there was a Thorn and a Thomas, but no matter, they're long lost in my dismal memory. So much of what was part of this experience is lost, names and places, particularly after I got into combat, but that's to come later. I did well in officer candidate school. I learned one great lesson that I unfortunately have not followed up on completely in later years. And that was not to criticize the performance of anyone else in the company. This had a purpose. Because each of us was voted on, or was to be voted on, at the end of the training period to rank us according to what kind of officers we were expected to become. My theory was that if someone was screwing up, well, everyone else could see it as well as I could. If someone else was a horse's ass, well, everyone else could see it as well as I. So instead of being critical, I was helpful whenever I could be, and friendly. One of the good things I got out of that training period was my rapport with the black Hutmans. Being a southerner, I spoke in a tongue which was a little bit more the tongue of the black. We were southerners and with the same southern drawl. Sat next to a man who's black whose name was Thomas. I guess he's the one I was thinking about a second ago. But I would go into their hutman at their request and help them with homework. I had the advantage of being a college graduate and had good schooling. So on things like map reading and other things, it took arithmetic and just classroom savvy. Well, I was helpful to them. We got to be very good friends, and I was probably the best friend they had among the blacks. Correction, among the whites. I don't remember anything that was particularly difficult for me in officer candidate school, except just the hard grind, which is what it was, always having to keep our shoes polished and up to our appearance up to perfection while we were too tired really to do anything but go to bed. We had to see to such things. The obstacle course was never any problem to me. The rifle range, I guess we were on the rifle range. I don't remember. Certainly didn't distinguish myself if that was part of it. There was an assignment that I had, which I carry heavy on my conscience. I was chosen to be one of the, I guess, S2 people in the company. How many people they had spying on other people, I don't know. But there was one very well put together black man. I say he's black man because anybody who's part Negro is classed as black, but he was almost as white as I, with light hair, except that it was woolly. Was suspected of having communist leanings, and I was told to cultivate him and given ways to make my report in a way that no one would suspect what I was doing. Wish I could remember his name, but we did get to be very good friends. We'd take long walks after supper at night and we'd visit. He told me the most poignant of stories one time. He was from Chicago. He went to an integrated private school when he was a tiny boy. And at one time, a member of his class had a birthday party. So his mother dressed him up in his best bib and tucker, his Buster Brown collar and Buster Brown necktie. And he went to his friend's house and he rang the front doorbell and stood there with his present all ready and bright and shining and beaming. And the little host came to the door and said, "You can't come in." And the little boy said, "Why?" "Because you're black." He said, "My whole world crumbled at that moment. And it's never been the same again. I looked at my hands, I looked at his hands, and I didn't know what he was saying. Somehow or another, I was different." And that has had a profound effect on me. We talked on, and he had read Karl Marx, and at one time he had gone to a national youth rally in Madison Square Garden, which was a promotion of the Communist Party in this country. This was in protest to the war, and he told me that he went out of curiosity, and he was totally unpersuaded. And I reported all this. We graduated on December the 26th. Never could understand why they couldn't have moved it up to the 24th so we could have gone home for Christmas. Instead, we spent a dreary Christmas on the post in the barracks with